the window was the sound of the crescendo. He came into her apartment, he left the blood stains on the carpet. She ran underneath the table, he could see she was unable. So he ran into the bedroom, she was stuck down, it was her doom. Annie, are you okay? So Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? Annie, are you okay? So Annie, are you okay? Are you okay?
All right, folks, welcome to the Muscat 360 Poocast. Ajay Bard, how she dangling?
Pretty good, Steve. It would be better if listeners would email us Thea credit card number, including the three digits in the back. What about you, Steve?
So, the police will come if we do not get your credit card number.
Do you want to die in prison? Just send us your credit card number. It is fine. We do podcast you send number.
Now, what's new at the Musky shop?
Do not read it! Do not read in the card!
What?
Do not read in the card!
Yes, I'm redeeming the card!
No!
Okay.
No! No! No!
Yeah.
No! No! No!
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast to Jay Bird. It seems like we need to stop franchising. So,
yes. I'm shell shocked. Wow is all I can say. That was incredible.
Hello, sir. This is David.
That guy sounds nothing like me.
It's unbelievable. No, it is what it is. After you deal with some of the stuff we deal with on websites and fun stuff with the crap, and my phone has just been that nonstop. You just got to farm it out to, you got the Canada version, Jay. You got like the Northwoods Report, we got to keep it there. Anyway,
yeah.
Man, my email has been blowed up, Jay. Blowed up. Q&A questions trying to get Steve's stash. So what we're going to do, we'll get through some of these. We are not going to get through all of them. I can promise you that. There is no way. So if you do not get your question responded to, we will probably, I'll try to, it depends on what's going on weather-wise. Hey, we might sneak an extra just answers episode. Maybe me and Jay will grab an extra 30 minutes here or there this week and throw out an extra answers episode. Do you want to do that, Jay? Maybe we'll get a minute or something.
Yeah,
we
sure could
just do that to try to get through some of these. But keep sending in. We're going to do Steve Stash next week. Again, we got to clear out these baits, Jay. We got to clear them out. And so we'll come up with a winner somehow at the end here. But anyway, other than that, we got that Magnus deal, Jay. It's coming.
We've got the Magnus deal coming. Yes, it is.
It's coming. So hold your horses. Is there anything going on this week before we dive right in?
Well, a couple things. We've got the 2025 new Muskie Gear video coming out tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon.
Yes.
Check it out. And Jimbalaya, they call him, is putting together right now, as we speak, a huge clothing sale for this weekend.
Wow.
And that's going to start Thursday, maybe even Wednesday night. Look for that on our website.
Some of the dopest gear.
You'll get an email if you normally receive our weekly emails with sales and specials. So, we're looking at 50% off a lot of clothing. So he's getting everything together right now. We're counting it and racking it up and getting ready for the big sale.
There you go. If you want swag, if you want swag and drip, as the kids say, Jay.
Well, it's not just clothing. Actually, it's merchandise, too. There's some other stuff on there. So,
tchotchkes. Get your musky tchotchkes and your swag and your drip right over here, boys. Right over here. You could make that. Listen, you could buy like oversized shirts and hoodies and like make yourself a little necklace. Have like a magnet. Anyway, moving on. We got tons. It's like a freaking coal mine of questions. First one up out of the box. Frank. Hey, guys. You talk about how important boat control is. I'm finding it out more the more I'm out. Could you just give a quick rundown on angle of attack, taking wind and current consideration? Anyway, he says, hashtag Steve's moustache. I don't have a moustache, Jay.
You got the whole thing.
I got the, I don't know, beard. Got a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird beard. Anyway, so fortunately, sooner than later, I'll have the second book edited and done here. But I actually did a big thing on boat control in it, and putting fingers to keyboards, pens to papers. Really had to dissect that. So I'll give you kind of the Cliff's Notes of that. So we're covering here. When it comes to wind, you know, you have to make a decision. Is it helping or hurting your angle of approach? It's not go into the wind, let the wind be at the back of your boat or your transom. Is it fast enough that midway through the cast, it's going to change your retrieving angle and cause your bait to come up? Like, say you're throwing bucktails or a crankbait. Is the wind dragging? So you've got to look at what force your approach and your speed is making and how that's going to influence how your baits are running and where they're running in the water column. So you have to pick, is this going to help or hurt? Do I need to fight the wind or can I play the wind? Is the wind, you know, if you're burning baits and just hucking and chucking at light speed and it's a light drift behind you, that's nothing. If you need to go low and slow, you're going to have to fight head into the wind where you can cast forward into the wind where it's not influencing your bait. The boat control is bait control. Right.
Yeah,
that's it. And you want to freaking talk about, I'm hammering her down on the next book there, which we have all the stuff I have going on and we'll get her done one of these days. But good boat control is good bait control. Not only are you presenting a bait with your rod and reel, you're presenting with your boat more so than you even realize. And I think what kills people more so than anything is they can't stop using their reeling hand. Right. So they have no control over the reeling hand, followed by they can't stay off the freaking pedal. Right. So if we have those two deficiencies, we need to consider it. The best way to like take that out of the equation. Let's say we take something that's just super classic. Can't go wrong with it. Probably everybody in musky fishing has owned one or one time or has one would be, let's say, a 6-inch Softail Phantom, Jay. Right. Take that to a pool, throw it, and if it doesn't look like it does in the pool, your boat control sucks. Because now that we're stationary, the only influence on the presentation is the rod and the reel. But yeah. I've seen guys retrieving glide baits and they got it walking the dog a little bit and then it starts not going the way they want because the angle of their line is changing. The boat's advancing too fast and now the bait won't walk. Right?
Absolutely. Totally understand.
So when you're casting and you're retrieving in a stationary, and I just did this, I'm going to tell you something funny. You find the right hotel at the right time of day to let you go in there with a rod. Okay. I had to film some underwater Magnus for Jay. Mm-hmm. It's iced up. Jay got some wonderful footage of that bad boy this summer. And we needed some additional stuff because I didn't have all the colors and heck, we still didn't. And I just go in. I'm like, can I? And the guy's like, yeah, do whatever. I don't care. Do whatever. You know, I'm going to murder. I do whatever. The pool's over there. But I don't have a pool, got a hot tub, but you know, you don't want any baits, no baits in the hot tub.
No. It's too much turbulence.
It'll crack your baits in the hot tub. But working baits in a pool, in a pool or on a pond, whatever, if you're stationary, you can focus solely on that. And then you look at it from that perspective, how your boat control will affect that. Blah, 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 blah. Hot tub. Moving on. That's the freaking one. You know, break into your neighbor's backyard. Use the pool. Anyway, don't do that. All right, Zach. If you were going to choose between a swimming dog and a Poseidon, which would it be and why? It would be a Magnus. To be honest with you, I'll say it flat out. We got a ton to go through. So Zach, this is just opinion based. I have not done exceptionally well with Poseidon. That bait out of the package is very, in my opinion, like stiff rubber, right? So it's got some durability because it's a hard rubber, but it takes a lot of speed and energy to get that bait up and going before it really has a pronounced action. Where the swimming dog's a little more supple and it's got a little more little more wag to it. Again, we don't pick the timing of these, but like I said, check out the Magnus. You'll see that. It sounds like a bad, the timing of that question sounds like a bad pitch or something. But looking at both of those baits, those are the two dominant swim baits in musky fishing. And looking at those, I went, ugh. And it's just like every bait I've come up with, I just go, nah. If I've got to mod it, if I've got to do a bunch of stuff, if I've got to take the bait and massage it and get it supple so it looks... No.
Okay.
Let's get it right. And so, like, I went for... screw it. But on Magnus, the tail of the Magnus, the actual paddle tail of the Magnus is bigger than any other musky paddle tail. The actual round paddle tail, right? Which means if you're working at high speed, it's got a ton of thump. And if you're working at slow speed, it's catching more water and it's got more swing. Right. Yeah. And what I look for in a swim bait, forget Magnus for a second. What do I look for in a swim bait? Because there's a bunch of European. European. There's a bunch of them European swim baits that I think are more lively and more lifelike. So a lot of the tip of the hat with what I've been doing is more towards that. But
yeah, and a lot of those are very small, though, too.
Small. Well, they make – there's biggies, too. They make, obviously, the whole range over there. You're going to find anything from 4 inches up to about 18 inches. But more so, I'm looking for belly roll and head side to side. And that's kind of what I ended up with. Was like, what do I have to do? Because some baits will have a belly roll where the whole bait just kind of rolls, like you know, up to side to side. That's it. The whole bait's doing one thing. Where what I wanted was three things. And so if you take a Poseidon, you throw it out and you really go fast, it's got a heck of a tail swack, right? Whack, 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 whack. So it's got more tail action, but the swimming dog has more roll. And some of the good Euro baits, like super hard to get or they don't make them anymore, had this head thing where the head would go left and right while it's rolling. And sometimes you'll get a wander where it'll go a foot to the left or a foot to the right at times. And so that's what my goal was. And so what I look for in a swim bait at the end of the day is, does it roll? Does the whole body roll? Does the tail wag? Does it have the thump and vibration? And does the head do anything? Right? Yeah. Because typically when it comes to hard baits, I don't care what it is, a bulldog, a Medusa, a swimming dog, a Poseidon, Kraken, all these baits, they tend to headshot that stuff, right?
These soft baits. Uh-huh, yeah.
The more head action you have, right? Not belly roll. The more action you have on that very front section, the more strikes you get. So that's what I was going for. If you got to pick me, you got to put me between the two, and I got to pick between a Poseidon and a swimming dog. I'm picking the swimming dog. That would be my take of the two. But you know, obviously my allegiances are at Magnus now because it kind of fixed some of the deficiencies I saw in just all the swim baits. And not to pound that freaking thing. Sorry. The thing I would say is this is I don't like the hook fouling of different swim bait style baits. Like you cast it out and you get hook fouled. And that's one thing I think that happens a lot, but talking to somebody on the boat, they're asking about swimming dogs. Like, oh, I get hook fouled every time. When you make a cast with a swimming dog, a really good way to eliminate that is make sure you're feathering the spool the entire cast, right? So if you imagine when that bait goes out, you know, you have all this speed inertia, you have this forward momentum, right? So the hooks are laid back, right? And this is with any bait. So we cast over our shoulder. If you visualize this, we're making the cast and the bait is pointed at the water, right? At a certain point in the lope, things kind of tend to turn around, right? And so if you feather that the entire time, there's not any slack where it can kind of grab itself. It's more of a line drive cast than this loping cast, right? You don't want significant slack or play in your line on the cast with swim baits because, like I said, hang the bait over your shoulder, it's pointed at the water, and you're retrieving it back at yourself. There's a flip over point with these baits. And so a lot of times when you're designing a bait, you have to look at how is that bait going to grab? And that's why guys will hook foul baits. Like, I don't care. That could be a tube. It could be a swim bait. It could be a bulldog. If you're getting hook fouls on your leader, like, so the front hook is grabbing your leader, You need to feather that spool and keep tension so there's not enough play in that line for that thing to kind of grab anything when it flips over.
And basically try to slow down, gradually slow down at the very, very end of the cast, right when it's hitting the water. As opposed to an abrupt change of speed.
That's where the
tangling or the bulldog thing.
It's at the top. Like you make a cast and really kind of start feathering it when it's the apex, like the top of the cast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then feather it all the way down, which happens really fast. We go, right? And that you should be slowing it down when it hits the top of the cast. Or just launch it like a T-shirt cannon with reckless abandon, and you're just retrieving this dog ball all the way back. God, move. We're never going to get through these. I'm too slow. EJ, love the podcast. My boys and I rarely miss an episode. Question for Steve Stash. When you're running through your pre-fishing checklist and are finding the bait, do you have a usual milk run order that you go through, or does it change conditions, time of year, blah, blah, blah? Example, are you checking depths versus structure, rocks or weeds to sand? This and staying on fish, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we've talked about, and I've talked about in the first book, Next Level Muskie Fishing, a thing that I do is like a three-point bait check, right? And it allows me to quickly ascertain our bait fish, which are easier to find the muskies, or bait fish mid, shallow, or deep. What I'm looking for are structural elements that hold bait fish throughout the year in some capacity, right? Now, to kind of clarify that, I'm not looking at bait fish suspended over weeds. Their weeds might be present, but when the weeds are eliminated, this is still a viable location for bait fish to be congregated. So it's a structural thing, not a cover thing. So if it is a structural thing, generally that allows me to kind of do that milk run year round, right? So if you base your bait checks or your 3-point check, if you base that on structure, pure structure that's productive, that's way more reliable throughout the entire course of the year. Right. If you're checking it on weed edges, and let's say you get on just a ripping weed bite, and you got to know our muskies mid, shallow, and deep, because let's say we have weeds present from 0 feet out to the mid teens, right?
Okay.
You can use that same thing to go, okay, or is there bait present mid, shallow, or deep? But once the weeds die off, that might be done for, right? That's not a permanent thing, because you. Anytime you're dialed in on something, 5-10 minutes to check things, go, okay, is it the same as yesterday? Is it the same as last weekend? Is it the same as this morning? So what I'm doing is I'm primarily relying on structural things to remove the seasonality of it, right? So if I'm going on points or a hump or a rock bar, you know, let's say my deep things are a hump. Well, you know, fish will usually gravitate to that throughout the course of the year, the general year. You know, there's not, it's not, and something could be said. Muskies make a lot of movements throughout the course of the year. But if we go from post-spawn to late fall, it's not that dramatic. It can be, but in general, it'll kind of clue you in. So if you have the availability, if you can find three pure structural elements that show you bait fish with regularity, those are way better bellwethers than anything that involves cover. Mm-hmm, that would be mm-hmm. the ticket there. But if you can't find it, you can't find it. Go with something you can either go, okay, reliably. And for the uninitiated on that, we're not going, we want to find bait. You're not, the goal was not to find bait at deep, mid, and shallow, all three. The goal is to go, where's the congregation as fast as possible so we can get to fishing? It's to answer a question, right? And to harken back to the book and harken back to earlier episodes before we kind of said we're going to cover some of the stuff we've covered before. That is just to expedite the entire process. And so I'm looking to see, let's say I go out, let's say on we've got a weekend. We got a Saturday and a Sunday. We got on Saturday and we do our check, and there's nothing on our deep location that continue as bait, and there's some mm-hmm. stuff on our mid, and there's definitely stuff towards the shallows. Okay. We go out, we focus our attention on the shallows. We come back out Sunday, and we do that check again. We go, whoa, there's a ton of bait deep, and there wasn't yesterday. And then we go to that mid thing, and go, well, there's a little bit bait. And we check our shallow thing, and go, well, there's no bait here. I might, before I even go cast those shallows, well, we caught a fish last night. If the bait has shifted and there's a dominant bait shift, I've just saved myself a couple hours of checking the shallows where I went, you know what? Something happened. It happened overnight. There's been a change in the bait. I'm betting you the muskies have followed suit, and we're going to hit that deep and that mid-depth area, right? So that will help you save time. It's a matter of efficiency. Now, to get to that point, you're not just going to pick three random things and check them. You've got to check this stuff over the course, a duration of time, right? Which it could be your 1 week trip to Canada or 1 week trip to Wisconsin. You check that those three areas, you find them, and then you check those three areas and you go, okay, this week, that's what it looks like. Or over a duration of time. Yeah. So
that's important. Right, yeah, for sure.
It's not a fix all immediate thing, but mm-hmm. it's a long term planning, a long term patterning tool. All right, checking this. Fred. What are your thoughts on joining crankbaits for trolling? After reviewing my hoard of baits, I noticed a lack of joining ones. And with musky shows coming up, I was thinking I should have a better selection of baits in the 5 to 7 inch range for summer. Thanks. I've been listening to podcasts for a while and look forward to every new one, Fred. Okay, here's my deal with jointed crankbaits. So I use a jointed crankbait primarily in slow scenarios because they give off the illusion of speed. There's more motion in a jointed crankbait. So if we're going pure vibration, if we're looking for max thump, max vibration, somebody's calling me and I'm not going to take it. Sorry about that. We're doing it live. So, and that was the call about a bait from Livingston, dude. But anyway, if I'm going for max thump, max vibration, I'm going with a non-segmented bait. Because that bait, it operated at higher speed. You don't need the jointed nature of it. And especially when it comes to trolling, they get deeper on a shorter line. Right? If you look at the trolling chart or the trolling data from say, a Joe Booker straight depth rater and a Joe Booker jointed depth rater, right? Both classics. The jointed models run shallower. A lot of that's because you have that split in the body. You now have this flat plane where the body has been split that is creating resistance in the rear of the bait, right? And so it's a matter of surface area, blah, blah, blah. So the surface, a jointed body, the surface area of the bait is increased by it being two halves is why it runs shallower. But some people swear by them. It could work on your specific lake where you got to have a jointed body. But for me, I'm going straight body. Now, when the jointed bodies really come into play, slow presentations, right? So a jointed body allows me to work a bait far slower, but it has more action, right? So let's take a straight depth rater, jointed depth rater. Or, you throw out the straight depth rater, I'm reeling it in. If I go support, we're talking goofy slow, barely turning the handle. We're getting a boo, 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 side-to-side action, right? Real slow, it just kind of rocks side-to-side. The jointed body has little more movement, more undulation. You kick it up just a little bit, not more. It's a little bit more pronounced. So I'm using jointed bodies in slow presentations, cold fronts, ticking and clicking rocks, all that fun stuff. That's when I'm thinking jointed. If it's summertime, straight bodies. That's what I'm rocking. Jay, any other endpoint there? Because you got some of those classics like the Pikey Minnow and some of that stuff where it's just like, I don't think.
Yeah, some cool boss shads and stuff like that, but there's far fewer jointed versions in any type of main crankbait style that's on the musky market right now. And you hit the big ones, like the straight versus jointed depth rater by Joe Booker tackle. So, like you said, it's the illusion of speed with jointed presentations and crankbaits, and
baby,
we run great at slower speeds.
We built two models to sell you two baits. No, I mean there's a time and a place. Ow! There's a time and a place for that, and a lot of people go. Yeah. They did. I say that jokingly because some people think I've heard that. Well, they just do that because you know they're bait. They run differently, and you when used in the appropriate setting, there is a marked difference in the response you'll get from a jointed crankbait. I've said it on here, like the pounder from Livingston, which is. That was done before I got there, guys, by the way. But, you know, it's pretty close to a jointed depth reader. But it runs slow. And it has that really slow float up. And me and you talked about jointed crankbaits where, you know, if I've got to hit stupid deep, I'll get that pounder out. And like I'm barely turning the handle and it's kind of doing its floppy dance there.
Yeah, and like Joe Booker's been saying for years, you know, if you are casting these classic depth raiders, you know, the straight version, you know, he works it almost more like a jerkbait versus the, you know, the jointed version is, you know, great over weeds. You know, you wouldn't think a jointed deep diver.
Because it has a shallower running trajectory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's moving slower over the weed, more visualization. Mm-hmm.
Then it pops up quick. Yep.
Popped up. Ben, as someone who almost exclusively fishes from the back of the boat, what suggestions do you have about casting and bait selection to make sure we're maximizing our ability to raise fish? So, you know, if you got your buddy in the boat or you got two people in the boat, you know, that comes to bait selection can come down to a matter of boat control as well. You know, if you're running it, maybe he's not running the boat, maybe he is running the boat, right? Some guys will have the pedal back there kind of doing the Northwoods guidesy thing, blah blah blah, however you want to do it. You got to watch, like, you know, your boat control and you know, in the back of the boat, if you do have to move the boat forward, you know, the guy in the front has a little bit more room to cast and lead, where you might be relegated in the back of the boat to doing some other things. So like top water out of the back. If the boat's moving, if it's like the boat's moving, you'll have a more influence because your casting angle is truncated by the guys in front of you. Typically, if you're the back of the boat guy, and to the crux of the question, what do I have to do to move more fish? Let's guess that he's the back of the boat guy, which is the best spot to fish in a boat, by the way. Nobody realized that. It's the best spot. You have generally the most stable platform, you're the lowest to the water, and you have less crap to get in your way when you figure eight.
Yeah, good point.
Right? People go, why do you got out of the front of the boat? Because it's the worst place to fish. There's your easiest answer, by the way. I'd rather, you know, people go, why do you do that? Well, me and Book, back to Book or Book, that's what Booker did, right? It's the crappiest place to be, and depending on how you run it, you know, if you're running it, nose, because I run my boat. Most people don't realize how often I run my boat entirely backwards, where I'll go down a pass and I'm actually running the motor in reverse. That's how I play the wind. But I deal with a lot of current in general. But, you know, if you got your buddies or whomever, hell, say it's clients, you got clients up front, you got your buddies, and you've got the cat's bird seat of where to be fishing out of. I'm going to throw more aggressive baits. Probably, you know, the quintessential like lineup for, let's say, Wisconsin Canada, we're trying to get down, put somebody on top water, put somebody on a bucktail, and then you're throwing like an aggressive crank, a suspending crank or rubber. Right. And my thought has always been, if I got two guys in front of me, and this is how I hate the back of the boat. Grew up like this, where it's just like you got family members in front of you and they're saturating everything in front of you. Do something different.
Yeah.
Do something different. That's the trick. They, you know, there's a hole I could go down the rabbit hole about casting accuracy and coverage, but let's say they're good casters and they're covering stuff. Do something different. That's going to be it.
Yeah. I mean, I fish the, you know, the back of the boat often, especially with you, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, I love it. Don't look at it as like your fishing cleanup, you know?
No.
Cause you're not,
you're not.
It's a whole different deal.
The other thing is we're going to just not get all these questions done. We're going to do another 45 minutes or an hour this week, Jay. All right. You know what? We'll do more on a get back. I got to run to a thing. We'll take a pause and I'll call you back. Anyway, with that being said, that the back of the boat thing, this is just a pet peeve of mine. when dudes are in a boat, they the guy in the nose of the boat thinks every fish is 40 feet in front of the nose of the boat, right? And the next guy in line, they're casting at this really angle in front of the boat, leaving this gigantic slice of the pizza pie to the back of the boat, right? So my different approach with the guiding thing is I'm forcing you, if I'm in the nose of a boat and we're going nose into something, if I think muskies are on blades or topwater, I'm going to be throwing something most of the time that they're not on to kind of cut people off. Don't throw over me. And I'm not saying like, oh, throw over me, but people are usually not going to throw past you, get past you. So you're kind of forcing people to hit stuff. Now, if you're fishing with buddies, let them do it. You want to kick your buddy's butt in the boat every time. Don't say anything about where he's casting because he's going to cast in front of the boat, which every time the boat advances, he's just leading the boat, leaving gigantic areas of open water and unfished water behind you. If you're with good guys and they know how to cast and they know how saturation casting is impacting them, do something different anyway.
Yeah. And when you're in the back of the boat, pay attention where, you know, the other people in the boat are casting, where their baits are landing, and you know, fish the gaps.
Back of the boat, Jay. That's what we used to say back in the day. Back of the boat with you. David, great podcast, guys. Got into the addiction of musky fishing last year. I'm in Kentucky and mostly fish Green River Lake. That's an awesome place. I love that place. What's your thoughts on Kentucky as far as musky fishing? You know, he talks about some other southern stuff. Give me a holler if you want to go do it. Kentucky's great. Grew up fishing there. I mean, we had a place on the run back in the day. So, given my druthers, one versus one, I'm going to go. I like, man, Green River is freaking cool. I'll go Green River over Cave Run. It's not as, in comparison to where I'm at, it's definitely different. So it's kind of, you kind of have the best of both worlds in Kentucky. It's a little, still some, they're still on the blades a bit more and all this stuff. And plus, you know, Cave Run, that you're aided by the hatchery being right there, right? They're always pumping fish in there. So you got good numbers over there. But Green River, man, there's some spooky big ones will come out of there with pretty good regularity if you know where to go. But, you know, general thoughts. I mean, you know, there's nothing bad you can say about it. The one thing I tell you, there's a lot of water that, David, you didn't mention, a lot of small water that you can sink your teeth into and find some cool stuff. Let's hit the next one. I think I just skipped one. Bobby, what's your thoughts on Boga grips? Use them, don't use them, situational use. Any jaw spreader mods to keep them in place? Brand recommendations, simple stainless steel seem to struggle. First with the jaw spreaders. Let me look here, Jay. We're rocking and a rolling, Barbarin. Let me look here, jaw spreader. Tyrant Tackle. Are they sold out?
We're getting more in tomorrow.
Get a hold. Okay, good timing. The Tyrant Tackle, they have like these little V's in them, and there's more surface area. That's going to be your Huckleberry. The other, like the straight up, you know, your Rapalas, they're fine, whatever. Your Bakers are fine. They're hitting the fish with this pointy thing. It's just jamming more holes in them. And you have this tiny little area. So you got to kind of poke into the fish and be kind of on this little pokey end, if you will. What's the O-Pros? O-Pros Jaw Spreader. Musky Dilator. O-Pros. Man, I have had so much coffee today, Jay, if you can't tell. Outpro. Okay, those look cool. They got little rubber tips to keep you in the game. So those are a viable option for $20, the O-Pros. Looks like an increased surface area there with some a protective rubber end to protect your musky. Boga grips. It's been said that they can damage the jaw of a fish. You're putting a lot of pressure in a really small spot. Back to surface area.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we have this metal thing, and we have the weight of the fish slumped over. When you're holding a fish with a boga grip, you've got kind of like this muscle arm deal. You're flexing, right? You're making a fist and holding that thing. And you got support of the belly. And now you've got this weird schlumpy weight in the center. If you look at somebody, and that's fine. If you want to hold them that way, I don't care. I'm not here. I'm not your dad. But the way you want to hold that fish, you're not really supporting that area behind the head. And you kind of have a hold of him uncentered, if you will. You don't have the weight supported as much. So I don't think, like, the Boga grip is putting a lot of pressure in a very small area from the nature of how you're holding it. The weight of the fish is concentrated on that area. So that can cause damage, right? You know, I've seen guys that's what they want to use. That's fine. I don't use them. We got a lot of gloves at the Muskie shop if you're worried about getting cut. I have known guys, Jay, I've talked to Jay about it. Like, okay, you're a surgeon, you're a guitar player, you're a hand model for Dawn dish soap. You can't get cut up. Okay. You know, but be smart about how you're using those devices. You know, mate, I don't know, Jay, how you would even do that. You know, like I said, if you look at the physical dynamics of it and the distribution of the weight on the fish, it's not the Boga grip itself. It's not that the Boga grip touching the mandible is doing the damage. It's the weight applied in such a small area, and it's with metal. So, you know, the thing with muskies, they got one way to feed themselves, one way to do anything. They don't have hands yet. We're working on that, but they don't have hands, Jay. Jay's got a project in his basement. He's into genetics now, but they don't have hands yet. So try to take care of their mouth as much as possible. Alan, what are the best ways to convert topwater strikes into catches? Any ideas? Upsizing hooks, modding baits, swivels, split rings. Thanks. Okay, quick off the rip here. What I like to do is make sure that my hook is heat shrunk, right? So you get your, what's one, like a Gooch's Tallywhacker. Gooch's, they're not shrunk. They don't have heat shrink, Jay. What else doesn't have heat shrink?
Top Kicks from Top Dick Kicks. Rose, Smitty.
Smitty.
Whopper Ploppers.
Yeah. Little bees.
Most of them don't.
Little
bastards. We're talking about the rear hook.
Yep. Rear hook. So I like to, on a rear hook, I like to have that heat shrunk or go hillbilly. Little electrical tape will go a long way. When I'm cutting hooks out, like if I'm on a topwater bite or a bucktail bite, Jay's seen it, I'm not heat shrinking stuff. A little bit of electrical tape will hold that hook exactly where you need it to be. Far easier to deal with, especially if it's raining, blah, 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 blah. So get the hook sticking straight out the back, ultra, ultra sharp. Now, if it's a matter of like you're getting the strike and you're not getting hook penetration, we'll get there. But have your hooks back, have them really sharp, have them in great condition. I like to have the body hook on my topwater, especially my tail props. I'll use a little dental rubber band to have that up under the body, right? And
right.
I will, it's something we've talked about a bunch of times. I used to deal it with Suix. I'll deal it with my Titans. I'll deal it with all kinds of baits, a little black rubber band. You can go to the Walmart and buy them. They're you have your braces. They're for your braces or for like braiding people's hair. They're really strong, little small rubber bands. I buy these big old box of black ones about once a decade, how often you need them, but that can hold your bottom hook to the body of the bait without interfering with it, how it's running. That will help you out. The thing with getting hit on top water and not getting them a lot of times is the hook set. Close your eyes. If you see a fish tailing behind it, don't watch him. Wait to feel the weight. And that's your predominant problem most people have. Don't set the hook because you saw something happen. Don't set the hook because you saw him strike. Set the hook because you felt the fish. Right? People will pull them away from muskies. Oh, they spaz out and it's a matter of milliseconds sometimes. Wait till you feel the fish because he's going to follow through with that thing in his mouth and you go, boom, he's going down with it. Boom, hook set, right? The ones that are easy to miss are the hook sets or like if they come out and nip it from behind. And that's why you want to have really sharp hooks, right? really sharp hooks, real sharp hooks on your topwaters and have them sticking out. Because if he comes up and kind of just nabs her from behind, that's going to help you. But topwaters, wait to feel the weight. And if you got to close your eyes, Jay. Don't wreck your boat.
And convert on the figure eight, too. That's a big thing, too, is just make sure you drive that thing. Get some elevation going on the figure eight. You know, drive it underwater.
Some elevation. Anyway, one more. Jay, we'll have to take a brief recording break. I got to do a thing, and we'll keep pounding through as many as we can. Ty, love the information I've been getting from the podcast the past year. It's really helped me dial in on some fish and make sense of what I'm doing wrong. My question today is, what baits can I be using besides a Bondi for vertical jigging? Really cold temperatures, he says, where he's at. Yeah, it's cold up there. You even have some ice some places. He said these fish, he's looking for something they're just going to pounce on, they're just going to go for. Everyone seems to be jigging big Bondis where I'm at. I'm trying to find an edge. Didn't we talk about some Bondi stuff last week, Jay, or something?
Yeah. We got a box of Bondis coming in tomorrow, hopefully, too.
The deal is this. Back to that, you know, the Bondi is unique in its weighting. I think we compared like the Pegasus and the overall weight. If you want something different, man, you know, I think last week when I was saying it's just a slab of something, you know, look at, there's a lot of weird saltwater stuff. If you're really looking for weird jigging stuff, they make all kinds of crazy heavy crap. You know, first and foremost, if there's a lot of pressure, and there, I know where he's at, and there's a lot of people doing that. They're just jigging Bondis off the bottom all day. You could mix it up, like I said, by modifying just about any rubber bait. I talked about last week with the cotter pin, and you can add blades to just anything. You could take an old torn up bulldog. You can take anything. A jig simple. It's just got to hit the bottom, and it's got to be able to have good motion. That fuzzy does that we talked about, there's not, in my opinion, especially for where he's at, there's not enough weight, but you can modify a fuzzy does it, and to really get a significant jig, you're gonna have to do something there. Jay, anything you would say? What's like alternative jig?
Yeah, we talked about it last week. I think it was that Musky Innovation Rippin' Dog. Similar. It's in the same vein as the Bondi bait. That's a cool alternative.
One more. Zach from Pennsylvania. What's up, Steve and Jay Bird? Glad you guys survived the year of cicadas with Joe being on blood hook. Let me get to it here. It's funny. I'm a big bass busky enthusiast, and I was hoping you guys could point me towards some reels for pike bass fishing. So we say busking, and if you're fishing pike and bass, he calls it piss fishing. I'm confident with my rod choice, but I'm looking to get something to toss out, like a MEPS number 5, some DT6s. I love my pin fathom and squall for reference. Love the work. Meow. Okay, so he likes the pin squall. He likes that. Jay, what's something, you know, we obviously, I know the low hanging fruit's going to be that freaking the Shimano 300, but he likes the pin. What else is there that size?
A little bit smaller in terms of weight and line capacity, reel options.
But he likes the pin. He's not a Shimano guy. And like I said,
not a Shimano guy.
I'm taking away the Tranks 300. You just.
Or the Curado. There's Curado options,
making
too.
Out
awesome.
Every day. Yeah. What do we got here?
Let's see. There's some small Daiwas. Yeah. What is that called? Tatura. That Coastal? Coastal?
Coastal. Yeah. There you go.
It's 200 size? 200 size would be right up your alley. I'd look at something like that.
Well,
in
that's
the Daiwa.
Yeah. Hold on. Where is that guy? Yeah. That's a cool. Okay. So, funky reel. It's a fast reel, too, because them bass guys, they got one move. Turn the handle.
They got one move.
Baby. Turn that handle. Anybody that bass fits, buzz bait. Got the buzz bait. They just turn. Just your ass is.
Yeah, but Daiwa Tatula. Tatula 200s, 179. That's a good price point.
There. Yeah, that Coastal I'm looking here, 32 inches per handle turn. 15 pounds of drag. There you go. That would be that thing. And plus it's built for, it's coastal. It's not the coast of Green Bay. You know, this thing's overbuilt. This is not the coastal central Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. It's a saltwater grade reel. That's why I would gravitate to that. Jay, I'm going to take a break. I'll call you back.
Okay.
Jay, I'm back. I just had to
I can hear that. I was going to say I can see that, but I really
people
can't.
Don't realize that was like a two hour couple seconds there. I had to run to an appointment. Now, Jay, would you like to know one of the major signs that you live in Appalachia? I'm waiting. It's like Jeopardy final question here.
That you live in Appalachia?
What is one of the major signs that you live in Appalachia?
Is that the mountain range by you? Is that what
it's
that is?
It's an area.
Really? Appalachia. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, the main reasons.
How do you know? I'll tell
you. You're going to have to throw me a bone here.
Here it is. When the employee at the barbecue restaurant ODs. So,
no.
Yes, sir, dude. You're sitting there, you're stuffing a little barbecue in your face, and old fat Connie hits the floor with the, they have to come Narcan her ass right there in the middle of the barbecue joint. So, damn.
Wow. That's a jolt to the system right there.
We call that
going down some.
We call that dinner and a show, boys.
Yeah, I'll skip dessert tonight. I think, check, please.
It was pretty epic. All right, let's get through some more of these. Greg, my fishing partner and I are coming from Western PA to Northern Wisconsin in the end of June. We're going to fish Boom Lake, the Rhinelander flowage. We'll also fish the Wisconsin River that flows into Boom. We'll be fishing from a 17-foot adventure sport. Its plates are, I'm teasing, he's giving a lot of details here. How far can we go upriver from Boom? What are the top fish and best musky baits in this flowage? So I've actually fished that. I think they named it Boom because of the amount of tree stumps you can hit. Boom!
Yeah.
You hit one. Boom!
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting place. Not a lot of people hit. So you have basically the river just going into just a straight, I guess we consider a reservoir. And you've got this big open water basin and the river shallows up a ton. And what I can tell you about that area, it's like never ending shallow flats, right? Mm-hmm. Shallow flat edges, shallow flat stumps, flats. There's plenty of stuff to hit. So you need to be careful when you're doing that. The main basin, like the open water, you'll see it. They got their little, you know, it's like a subpar version of the Minocqua bats, so I hear, Jay, right there. You know, they got the, it's
right,
not,
right.
It ain't the North's greatest ski show, but it's one of them. They got their little ski thing going on there. So you basically have a little public park, little area right there in ski shows. But that main open area, I believe it's, I can't remember if it's a point or island. It's been a minute. But you'll see it right in front of the area where they do the skiing and you got the outflow and everything. You've got a big open water basin. Caught them there kind of just zombie trolling it. Just there's not a lot of like it out in the open water. It's just open water. There's not a definitive structure. And you'll see open water bait fish and you'll pick up suspendo. So have done well on you know, classics like it's straight depth raider. I've actually caught them on headlocks out there just trolling that open water. So you have two dynamically different fisheries within one area, really. You've got really shallow river, big open water basin. By that time, if you guys are coming up in June, you know, give the guys at the shop a holler because they're going to be able to tell you what colors are hitting. But primarily up north, you know, you can't go wrong with your purples, that classic grape flame. You got your chartreuse and purples good. You know, obviously black and orange is classic. You can't go wrong there. And that water does have a bit of a tannic deal to it. You're going to have to think about it from that perspective. And again, purple. Purple.
There you go.
Walleye colors work. And do not sleep. Don't you dare. Do not sleep on that pumpkin color. Kraken. Pumpkin. In a shocking twist, Jay and I know this all too well. Pumpkin. I don't know why they like it, but there's a reason there's a pumpkin colored baiting that line up. Let's look here. Jay, when's the last time you OD'd working at a barbecue restaurant?
Can't say I'm familiar with that scene.
Okay. God, the freaking barbecue.
Thanks for asking.
The barbecue was freaking awesome, though. You know, it's like you're like, yeah, 4 out of 5 stars. Other than Fat Connie, I don't know if her name was Connie, but here's Fat Connie tweaking on the floor. You know, excellent food. Mm. The service, nah, not so much when you're geeking there on the floor. She's lucky she didn't like lose an eye to like a peanut shell, Jay.
Sure.
You know, people throw them on
chips
the floor.
Flying.
Yeah. Frank! Oh,
sure.
How do you change tactics going from muddy stained floges to clear stained Bolex? Okay, so he's saying muddy stained floges to clear stained bowl lake. So I'm trying to differentiate. Are you asking if like from a stained flowage to like a clear lake, or is it says clear stained? Or we mean tannic? Let's just talk watercolors here. So if we're going from like flowage to combat muddy water, and this is what you gotta realize. There's different things cooking here. You have tannic, like we just talked about. That is formed by small wizards that live at the bottom of the lake. Also, tannic acids, tannins, have to have a little bit to do with that. So between the wizards and the tannins, what is it? Is it tannics, whatever? The main, what actually causes it, other than the small wizards, creates that brownish hue in the water, which is not
it's
muddy.
A Smitty wizard spell is what causes the whole darn thing.
It's a rusty Smitty wizard spell resting on the bottom of the leg. But you have the introduction of tannic acids, whatever, that cause the brown, the off color, right? Then you have muddy water, which is literally from current and flow and off run, getting things muddy. Literally, mud's introduced, silt introduced to the water column, blah, 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 or mud. Then you have turbidity. Turbidity is when you have things high in the water column, for example, like clay, and dust will build up where it's like, it looks like it's muddy and cloudy at the top, but it's not. It's just high in the water column and then clear. But realistically, what we've got to look at is we're looking at, you know, adding more flash and more sound often to overcome darker water conditions. You've got to consider how not just, okay, how's this bait looking water? How's it looking this hue or this color of water? Again, harkens back to what we just said about purple standing out in the tannic water up there, right? It just does. It
something about it.
There's something about it. It's got a shimmer, a sheen, something where their visual acuity is far easier from the pickup on that purple than just about anything else. But what you got to consider is when you're changing like water clarity, water color, that also changes light penetration, which is far more important to me than what color bait you're throwing, right? So when you deal with a turbid water, there's turbidity. Those fish are going to be, even on a high, bright, sunny day, a lot of times they're still going to be shallow because the light's not able to penetrate, right? Dark water, light doesn't penetrate as well. Gin clear lakes, they're going to go deep, 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 right? So you take like Lake Geneva or something like that, pretty dang clear. As long as the houseboats and the yachts aren't out there tearing up, it's pretty clear. You'll find fish that are hanging pretty low on a bright, sunny day, and they're not coming up until evening or night. That is some delicious, sweet tea. Jay, let me ask you this in all honesty.
Yeah.
It's not like I stepped over her convulsing body, but was it rude of me to go get a refill while somebody's like literally jonesing out on the floor? I feel a little guilty.
When you said, hey, can I get a refill over here?
That's not like I walked over her body, but I might have walked 10 feet by her. And you know what? You're geeking. I just want another tea to go, lady. You're not stopping me, obviously. But it's still good tea.
Steve's sitting there. Oh, you got to have backup somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe I'll spend, you know, maybe it'll be eternal damnation for stepping over somebody's body as they're geeking out there. But we got to factor that in as far as the water clarity, how that diffuses light and your light penetration. So you can, the darker the water, this is very loose rule of thumb. The darker the water, we can fish shallower in general, right? So the effects of a cold front, effects of things are not gonna play as heavily. So if I'm going from like from a turbid body of water to a clear body of water, so I'm going from Wabagoon in Canada to Eagle, two different ball games, you know, and I like that juxtaposition because those lakes are exceptionally close to one another and they couldn't be any different in water color in the summer. The composition, the structures are not that dissimilar, but we have a complete difference in color. And you go, yeah, I mean, we're talking literally, guys, these, you know, from dock to, I mean, if you went from government docks to the closest dock on Eagle, it'd take you just a bit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, as the crow flies, they say, Jay.
Yeah.
You know, as the hillbilly.
Just down the road.
As the hillbilly tweaks on the floor. That's how far it is. But
right around the corner.
Right around the corner. Sir, are you really getting. Yes, it said free refills. I don't care if she dies. Anyway.
Wow.
Oh, there's cookies free. There's nobody at the counter. So anyway, you know, those two bodies of water being right there, so similar yet so different, just like, you know, just like my therapist says, you realize the effect that water clarity has on musky staging, right? When you go from that body of water to the next, the same thing can be said about the Northwoods, you know. The old adage is go dark early in the season, you know, go to that stained stuff. It warms up faster, yada, yada, yada. And, mm-hmm. and you'll see that. Anyway, we got so many to ruckus tuck us here through. How many more do we have in us? I'm sitting here. Okay. Lawrence, Steve, Stash, question. What's the scariest situation that you've had to deal with guiding? There I was at a barbecue restaurant.
Was it Tuesday?
It was a Tuesday. It was today. She just twinks out, boys, right there. Connie has a conniption fit, frothing at the mouth. Can I place it to go order? Scariest situation. I wasn't guiding, obviously, because we're freaking up and we're filming stuff in Canada. Me and Tim, the scaredest I've ever been on a boat was we were in between two storms on Eagle and we saw the pea soup rotation in the sky. Thought we were about to get tornadoed and literally it was so bad. You know, the power poles, Jay, on the back of boats where you have the shallow water anchors.
Sure.
We're in Tim's boat and we put those down and we jammed the nose up on a shallow shore and put those shallow water anchors down. And the wind was blowing so hard and the waves were so bad. We were actually tucked behind an island and it was so violent that it broke the shallow water anchors free. And we were just spinning like a teacup. And there's a guy that was a Canadian dude that was guiding walleye and he and his party found us and we actually tied the boats together and got our engine going and tied our boats together and jammed them up on an island together. That's how bad it was. Like, you're like, okay, well, hey, nice to meet you. Got, you know, so that was terrifying. It wasn't a good day. The drive back and everybody just like, you know, you'll get 2 foot chop and everybody goes, oh, we were in 4-footers. No, you weren't. You were not in 4-footers. We were in 4-footers. It was like, oh, God, it was horrible. That was bad. The scariest was, as I mentioned, and he's probably asking because the podcast is losing a person overboard here when it's sub freezing in 30 some degree water. That was scary. That takes the cake. I never want to do that again. So be safe out there. That one. Sometimes you kind of get that reality check. Oh my goodness, people, the phone today, go away, potential spam. And they wonder why I did the intro that way, Jay. They wonder what about the intro. All day long, potential spam
calls. Diversion. Yeah, diversion. It's all about the divert. Yeah.
Hello, sir. I would like to talk to you about your Bates extended warranty.
Hello, Jaybird.
Hello, Jaybird. So anyway, man, if they only knew, like, the amount of scam emails you get for because of the shop and everything. Oh goodness, just the crap that comes in.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, hello, my name is David. but yeah, I mean, losing somebody overboard, that's scary stuff in that cold water.
God, yeah.
God, yeah, whatever. Much less stepping over somebody tweaking to get another tea. Tom, how long do you cast a lure without any follows or bites before you decide to change colors or lure types?
That's a good question.
Love the podcast. There's two levels of this. If I know the pattern's going to hold, I'm notorious for this guiding. Let's say I go out on here. I'm out on Monday and we get a couple in the boat or we get a nice one or whatever. And I'm positive. Nothing's changed. I've done my bait check. Everything's looking gravy. I might throw the same crap all day long because I know what's going to happen. Now, I'm usually doing that if we're in very narrow bite windows, right? If you know, okay, the musky activity window is generally been 10, 20 minutes of just a few follows, maybe a strike. I'm not playing with presentation too much, right? If it's been working and I know it, everything's the same, don't get me wrong, and you'll hear people, well, you can't count on that, and you usually can't. But if I'm positive and I know I'm dialed in, I'm not making a lot of changes. If I step on a new body of water or I haven't fished in a while or whatever, let's say I got to go to Wisconsin, you know, bop up there. Okay, we'll do it here in a few months. We got the Bash coming up. Was it July 19th, Jay? We got that coming up here soon. So I'll get to test my skills yet again. Jay will pick some stupid lake and we'll go out there and figure it out. And when I'm figuring something out, I'm starting from experience, but I'm starting at ground zero. And at that point, you've got to look at structure. We got to look at cover and we got to look at forage. And I'm going to play around inside of a set of parameters that I develop from what my electronics, my read of the water and the seasonality are telling me. And you go, well, just answer my damn question. How often do you do it? Nah, here's the thing. If we are, say, late fall, colder water, not cold water, but we're not, it ain't icing up yet, but we're towards the end, right? Well, I know I can eliminate top waters, bucktails, shallow cranks. I've eliminated a ton of bait, so I've narrowed my bandwidth of what should be effective.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to stay inside of that bait class for quite some time, right? Because seasonality and all these other factors said, I'm throwing rubber. Let's just cut the chase. We're casting. Let's say we're throwing rubber. You go, okay, well, the forage base in this lake is X, Y, and Z. I'm in kind of this size class. If I've kind of just narrowed it down for musky math, I'll give it 2 hours, 3 hours. If I'm coming into a major or the minor starting or major, I might get a little bit more exploratory, but you can use context clues more so than anything, seasonality, current weather, and kind of let the structure dictate your running depths. You can do the math any given day and kind of narrow it down to one or two things. So you're not sitting there flipping through the tackle box all day long, right? Now, the flip side of that coin. What if it's not a deep bite? What if it's a shallow water bite? The shallower it is, the more options you have. Most musky baits don't run past 5 feet. Like, God, this is a Dr. Bob project, you know, make a damn Excel spreadsheet of every musky bait that's currently available and their max running depth. I'd love to know what the percentage is. Because, and I'm talking like what, not either, you know, whether it's their effective depth range.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course.
You have from 8 to 0 is freaking probably 90% of your baits, if not a higher percentage. Right? That's where it gets crazy. Are they on cranks? Are they on big cranks? Are they on small cranks? Are they on blades? Are they on twitch baits? Are they on diving rods? Wham, 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 wham. That's where it gets convoluted. So you got to look at that. But let's take it down to bare bones basics. Let's say you don't have a clue. You don't have a freaking clue and you're just out there winging it and doing your best. You know, what I would recommend you do, find areas. Do your homework on this looks good. You know, here's vegetation and here's a structural element. Anybody, you don't even have to have own a musky bait or a musky rod to look at a map and kind of work through cover and structure. And you go, okay, let's make a couple passes through this. Let's do a complete pass with a bucktail. Then turn the boat around and do a complete pass with a diving rise. Then turn the boat around and do a complete pass with a crankbait, right? So you can't look at what the time of the bait, whatever. You get what I'm saying, right, Jerry?
Yeah.
We're kind of breaking down. What?
Play with speed. And play with speed, too. That's another thing. Let's say, the previous program you were talking about, if you were going out, hopefully you got somebody in the boat with you, you know, and it's just like we are sticking with our primary presentation here, you know, because of the factors that you just went over. Mm-hmm. You know, you got two people, you can play with speed and tempo and, you know, stuff like that a little bit if it's not working, because he was asking originally, I think, you know, how long do you stick with it, you know?
Well, and
you could shorten that whole you can shorten that whole time frame by having an extra person in the boat and make sure that you're not doing the same kind of tempo with similar type presentations.
Absolutely. All right, Pat K. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I fish in southern Wisconsin. When I describe the lake, people will know. It's a deep, very clear lake with light penetration that can reach up to 30 feet. This lake has all type of forage from panfish, trout, walleye, cisco, and others. Just seeing what your method of attack would be on this lake. So what I would do, I would put on camouflage. And I would sneak up on the lake very quietly before attacking it. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, it sounds like one that gets a lot of yacht traffic.
Probably
so that would be
one.
Something, yeah, fish at night and get really good at trolling.
No, yeah. I said it earlier, Geneva, I think on another question, it's like we all know, buddy. We all know. It's like Geneva. Been there, done that. Big old boats. When you got heavy boat traffic, I mean, it's just yachts cruising around. The best action I've heard is at sunset and at night or early in the morning. Tubes, bulldogs, stuff like that, especially because you're still going to get pressure out there. Do something different, you know. I still like the premise or the thought process of, like, literally just sneaking up on a lake, though, Jay.
Sneaking up on that lake.
Yeah, just go back there and that's why I said wear camouflage. You come over and stab it. Get out your buck knife 110 and just start stabbing the water. You'll take him down eventually. Sean, I'd like Steve Stash from the 80s. Actually, there's we've seen those pictures. That's some Todd and Dave in there. Oh, he says, where do I apply to be head sniffer at the muskie shop? Head bait sniffer. I don't know if
that's Elmer's number. He could hook you up.
Yeah. Oh, is that like a cork sniffer, Jay? Is it like,
maybe, did we talk about that earlier? I can't remember.
No, but maybe.
Where'd that come from?
You know, you get your wine aficionados. Everything's, you know.
Oh, yeah. The one year it was cheese, right? I get it. Okay.
No, I'm just saying, like, no, you don't get it.
Remember? You were talking about spoiled cheese in the hot sun that one. Well, you got to have someone to smell it.
Retorted anyway. Now I've messed up. Oh, here's a Jay question. I kind of messed up which ones I was going through here. They're all out of order because I'm just reading them out of the email. Todd, what software do you or you guys like video editing out of? I'd like to play around with some GoPro video from recent fishing trips, but I'm new to this whole filming thing and wanted a little guidance. Jay. It's a tailor-made JSE question. What video software would this young man really enjoy editing out of?
Adobe Premiere.
Can't beat it. Wow. God. Dang.
It's pretty simple to get the hang of, really. Just got to practice and figure out what you can do with what you have and go from there.
There's
so much instructional stuff, you know, you can get on YouTube and it'd be like, okay, I'm stuck here, you know, with this feature, but there's a lot of cool features and stuff looks great.
You know, work with good talent. That's what saves Jay's ass. All right, Mike. I spent the entire afternoon driving around northern Wisconsin looking for Lake Suckatobin. I ran into Dick Stemke Jr., and he wasn't very helpful. He would only tell me that it was situated somewhere between Chicago and International Falls. By the way, Christian.
That sounds like something he'd say.
So that's freaking.
He's so helpful.
Somewhere between Chicago. Yeah, it's up there. Oh, yeah. Just go down there, Route 75.
Yeah, Dick's secretive, man. I'm telling you.
Secret. Dick's secrets. Oh, all right.
Jay. Was there a question in there?
No, it was just.
Oh, it was just that was a good one.
There's
though.
So many. I'm just kind of grabbing. I'm just playing grabby.
Do it. Here. Do it.
Jake, greetings from the frozen tundra of northern Pennsylvania. Mm. I'm a new multi-species guide on the Susquehanna River. Oh, it's Susquehanna, but we said Suckatobin. It's funnier if it's Susquehanna. And heard you guys bring up a great point about safety and having the space blankets on board. I've never thought of that, as we normally fish into early mid-December before as the river freezes up. I have a basic first aid with a couple little things I've added, but just you know, basic hook wounds, bites, gill rakes, etc. Have you added anything else in your safety kit on board that newbies like myself wouldn't think of when it comes to safety for clients, especially when I've realized all walks of life and many of them lack sea legs or getting into your boat? Yeah, dude, exactly. I love the podcast. Love showing people great time with the smallies on the Susquehanna and ruin their lives introducing them to muskies. Thanks. Okay, back. This is not the muskie safety podcast because we kind of touched on that on Scary Moments. But what's in the boat? Right. Number one, if you've never been on a boat that's on fire, have a fire extinguisher because that shit sucks. So you want that on hand. I've been there. That was exciting. Things that I have on hand, those instant ice packs. I've got the space blankets. What else do I have? Super glue, big ass bottle of alcohol for cleaning stuff up. And then in case, and I've not had to use it, but, and this is not medical advice, Jay, do the lawyer thing and say this is as fast. Do not misconstrue. This is medical advice. But I keep one of those ace, you know, like the ace bandage wrap stuff, like kind of the sticky material. It's not sticky, yeah. But, you know, like the it's a bit, just a roll of the crap, right? And you can kind of tape things up with it.
Yep.
In case there's like a bad laceration, as a means to just close it, because you're not trying to, like, you know, put band-aids on a bad cut, like you break out your knife and you cut the shit out of yourself or something, or a big long cut. An ace bandage is a means of compression, right? So I can take the roll. What is that, what it's called? It's made not ace, is ace, what is that stuff, Jay? Like, you know what I'm talking about, like they call it sport, is it sports tape or what is it? It's like,
yeah, it's real stretchy.
Time.
It's kind of sticky. It'll stick front and back, so it somewhat sticks to your skin. But as soon as you wrap it won't loosen up. It's ace bandage.
Ace bandage. Yeah, I just Googlefecated here. Elastic wrap, medical wrap, and it comes in a little box. I put what I do, and this is a trick for your first aid. They'll sell first aid kits and all this crap. Take everything out of it. Put it in sandwich bags. Because there's nothing grodier. I've done this with a client. Like, hey, they got a musky tooth and they got freaking all mangled. Not bad. Like, you know, we're not going in. It's not like so bad we're going in, but you break out your med kit and everything's all gross. It's like, oh, yeah, use this alcohol wipe that's got mold on it, you know. So take everything out, because hopefully you're not using that very often. But that ace wrap for lacerations, you know, as far as that, I hate to say this, people are gonna be grossed out. I keep sounds so stupid because I had, Jay's seen, I got that little puncture on the face where I've had a hook close to the eye, but I got my eye scratched one time, right? And there's nothing worse than like a cut or abrasion on your eyeball. I'll leave it alone from there. But I have a freaking eye patch thing, like new in the little box, because nothing hurts like light hitting your eye after you have a corneal abrasion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you try driving the boat, you're squinting real hard. God, it hurts. But other than that's probably the weirdest thing I have, but that's just out of a fear of like getting a bait in the eyeball or the face again. Other than that, that's all I can think of. Jay, anything like, you know, Narcan maybe for the server? If I was taking this person from the barbecue restaurant out and they just you just cast it, they just get full blown. Connie's tweaking there on the boat. Do you need Narcan for that?
You don't have a bone saw or anything in case you got to amputate. I mean, you've never done that, right?
No, not yet. No bone saw. Goodness. God, grief. Greg, trying to win a free bait. LL. Going into the 2025 season, I feel like trolling is going to be very important. That's all he wrote. I'm teasing.
Okay. Yes.
Guys, that's the news from Greg B. That's
positive attitude. Positive there you attitude. Go.
He says, do you think 8.5-inch Supernatural are a little obsolete and just stay with the 10s and 12s? And are you going to come out with a downsized Magnus as well? Okay. There is, Duff makes the, it was an 8.5 it's called or whatever, the smaller headlocks, matlocks.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those.
They're not obsolete. It's just a different ball game, just a smaller body. So you got 8, 10, 12. I like 10. That's kind of where I live at, is the 10-inch model. Man, I had a thought the other day. You want to talk about a rabbit hole, Jay? This is stupid. But you look at the way a muskie sees a bait. They're following it from below and behind, and you go,
yeah, right.
Wonder if they really care how long it is. If you're like directly behind it, it's foreshortened, you're really not seeing a lot of the overall length, but whatever.
Well, it's probably a water displacement thing more than anything.
It's a vibrational profile, yeah.
Sure.
I find that the 10-inch baits are perfect. If you look at, okay, you go, a trophy size crappie's 14 inches, right? You know, measure a panfish, you know, so 8-inch bait's kind of the standard stuff. When I'm trolling, I'm going for big thump. I'm going to go with the 10. Then he asks, and we're giving up a little bit of the ghost here, a little lead up. But he says, you're coming out with a downsized Magnus. So, and he says, thanks for everything you guys do. And then he says, thank you for making fun of that person that OD'd at the barbecue. He didn't say that, but he did say thanks. Well, he predicted that trolling's big this year. Maybe he knew.
That's good.
Guys, he's ahead of the game. We got a time traveler. So you'll see it in some of the Magnus stuff that's coming out here soon. Jay's editing down some video and everything, and we just got one of them done. So the Magnus is just under 10 inches if you lay it out and measure it, right? But there's another body that you're going to be able to get that takes that thing just a tick under 8, right? And it changes the overall look of this Magnus to look more like a panfish. And so you buy one bait, and honest to goodness, like with the Kraken and stuff, I've found this. Switching out the tails on the Kraken, you know, if you're really going to fish it aggressively, you need some super glue on the skirts and on the paddle tails and on the grub tails. You know, me and Herbeck have done stuff. If we really want to play with them on the water, we use a small zip tie on the body, you know, just to hold the skirt on so we don't super glue them on and you just clip it right off. The Magnus, you know, learning, and with the Kraken, it's just not a lot of surface area to grab onto there. With the Magnus, you cannot pull the back off. You can't. Like, you can freaking do whatever you want. The tail is not coming off that bait. Until a fish just destroys it, it's not coming off that bait. So you don't really need adhesive. So what I've done is in the design on this is there's the replacement tail, the standard tail that's coming out that will keep the bait at, you know, right there to the 10-inch mark. And then there's the other tail that will take it to a downsize. So call it like the downsizer tail. And that's going to be vicious. So you get all the same action, everything out of the same bait, which for me, it's like, okay, so let's say I'm in Wisconsin or Canada or whatever. I'm really on a swim bait thing. I don't want to have all these freaking swim baits in the boat. I mean, between me, you, and the fence post, they're getting so freaking expensive. I don't want to. I don't want.
And the magnet says the variable weight system.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I just need one bait.
One bait.
I looked at a lot of this crap, and as you guys know, listen to the show, I'll look at it and go, why do I have freaking 19 freaking swim baits? I don't have room for this shit, you know? I need three deep walleye, three shallow walleye, two, and you're like, ugh. And God forbid we catch a pike and it tears the tail off or tears the paddle tail up or whatever. Now we're just right back, and you're taking like $40, $35, whatever it is. Take that one pike and throw it in the trash. And that's what I'm trying to fix. So, and just for the podcast people, I don't know if we said it or not, the replacement bodies on these are under $10. That's the cool thing. So, spoiler alert.
Yep.
So we got the pricing on it finally. I think you get the whole other. You don't get the, when you buy a replacement, you don't get the hard head, right? But you get the rest of the bait for $9. So you catch as many pike as you want, and you go, wow. And the other thing I did, I made sure the plastic, it's super lifelike and supple, but it's pretty damn good. So I have, as far as my record right now, before I replaced the body, I got 5 muskies on one of the walleye collar bodies. It doesn't matter what color it is, but I got 5 muskies on it before. I was like, I need to replace that. And then you just take the back hook off and pop the body off, and you're right back to the races. But so there will be the 8-inch body. A couple podcasters have been on guide trips with me, and we fished in it. It's cool, man. It works. So you've got that smaller body. You don't need to change the hooks. The one thing you're going to look at when you go with the smaller body, go, man, that hook is really close. The back hook is just dangerously close to the paddle, but it's not going to catch on it and get in the way. So you don't even have to, you know what I'm saying? You just take the back hook off, slide the whole thing on, put the shorter body on, put the hook back on, boom, you're right back at it. So that's up the sleeve. So yeah, spoiler alert there. Working on it here. Who we got here? Zach! Win Steve's stash question. Steve and Jay, have you ever heard of catching muskies on large flipping style bait rigs? I end up catching 3 40-inch plus muskies this late fall, 2 by a dam and 1 on a narrow river in a deep hole. Like to know your thoughts. Love the podcast. See you at the bash. Your favorite, your friendly Merrill River rat. So I like that.
Did you say?
What? His name's
was
Zach.
It Josh?
No, his name's Zach.
Zach,
okay. Merrill River Rat. I like it. I like a good sign off like that. Flipping jigs, the bass style. I have Booker again. Joe used to catch tons of early season muskies when he was filming bass stuff back in the day with jigs, flipping jigs. I mean,
I've done that too.
Yeah,
for sure.
They work, especially when you're hitting. You know, he's talking about against dam walls, against deep holes. They work. Jigs will work on shallow flats. It's not something that's done in quote unquote musky fishing very often. I think there's like that Esox Cobra jig or something, Jay, that was available at one time. It's probably still available. If somebody wanted to, like, if you made like a stand up jig, like a bass, like a musky size stand up jig, it would catch fish. And like 7 dudes would get it. They'd be like, oh, hell yeah. We needed this. And everybody else goes, you don't throw them for muskies? Muskies don't know, man. They have no clue. They don't know the difference. So, yeah, flipping jigs work. I had an email from a podcaster. He was talking about something that I thought was just bad to the bone. Getting rid of like his plastic trailers. And he's using Uncle Josh pork skins, you know, off of some of his baits. It's like, dude, all this stuff's interchangeable. Mm-hmm. Stylistically, mm-hmm. It's interchangeable. So, yes, flipping jigs work. Some guys will quote-unquote go pike fishing in the early season, you know, with a little leader action on there and pick up a bunch of fish. So it's kind of one of these sleeper things.
That was a very, very viable presentation, I mean, back in the day. Like when I started at the muskie shop a long time ago, that was a huge deal.
Yeah,
I mean – This is almost the early days of muskie fishing, you know, just like internet's just coming around, stuff like that. You know, late 90s. I started in the late 90s at the muskie shop. So
18.
That was, you know, and a lot of these people are gone now or just don't make baits anymore. But, yeah, I mean, man, you look back at some of the old Musky Shop catalogs from, you know, early 2000s.
1774.
Not that old. Okay. No. That was the Elmer edition. You know, he came out with the first one back then.
It's a stick made of wood.
Yeah. Remember? Oh, yeah. There you go. That was an old intro there. Yeah. But yeah. No. The whole jig thing, stand up jigs, Reaper tail bodies, Reapers. Just Reapers. Yeah, just Reapers. Creatures. That's what I meant to say. Creatures. Remember those things?
Yeah.
It was little do nothing, ugly looking little millipede looking thing you put on the back of a stand-up jig and you know,
jig
and a pre-wired leader with 60 pound seven strand, you know, 12 inch with a crane swivel on one end. Simple stuff, but you know, a lot of people use that, especially early season back in the day.
When are you motivated podcasters make some freaking jigs here? You know, you guys are always looking.
Well,
for
we just got a bunch in. We just got a bunch of birdie stuff in, and Dick Morris still makes stand-up jigs, so we carry those too. So yeah, you put the trailer of your choice on there.
Go to town.
Freaking go to town.
Get out your Zebco 33 and pitch away.
With your Musky Master 27 pound.
They work. Deckard. I mean, it's funny you say that, though. I mean, it's one of those deals of you forget some of this stuff. You know, it's you use it and you abuse it and you do it to it. That still works. I mean, the last time I was doing anything like that, if you remember, I was talking about crazy pattern I found a few years ago. These things are up there eating crayfish, and I'm doing some funky bassy stuff, you know? Something that's, I've said it before, frickin' you can catch muskies on Cinco's pretty dang well. You know, it just works, but most people are just not doing it. Scott S., recent musky convert coming from the largemouth world. A favorite method for large... Oh, bastard. This literally... Is this the same dude? Surely not.
Different name.
What was the guy's name?
Zach was the previous one.
Yeah, Zach. You got a twinsy over here. That's too weird. Yeah, different IP address. Different guy. That's funny. Have you ever used
it's almost the same question.
Literally, have either of you utilized a beefed up bass jig as a method for musky? I've scoured YouTube and there are only a handful of videos on targeting musky in this fashion. Love to hear your opinions. Well, listen back about 7 seconds ago.
Cool.
That's funny. Those were just back to back.
Nice.
Oh man. Dylan Curtis. What makes you so passionate about musky fishing? Jay, is it the health insurance? A place to go during the day? What is it?
For me to go to work every day? I don't know what it is. Insanity, Steve.
Insanity. Mansanity. Michael, love the show. Truly learned so much listening. Question regarding Pacific Lake. Feel free to spot burn it if you want. We're not going to. We've already done that. It's Lake
Feel
Geneva.
Spot burn.
It's so, just burning up one. Like, going up to this lake, I take a week with the family, mid-July. They've always done well. I'm paraphrasing. After 20 years of not going, return this year in the second week of August. Had a big cold front hit. Ooh, low was near 40. Yeah, there was a nasty cold front up north. We do fish a little bit. Hold on. Okay, so we do fish a little bit bass too. Caught way less and zero pike in recent years. Interesting enough, I found a DNR report on numbers based on fishermen surveys and see the difference from numbers in this lake in 2002 versus 2022 dropped drastically. Curious if during a 20-year hiatus something happened or changed this lake. From listening and learning from you guys since that trip, my gut tells me maybe I spent too much time fishing areas and patterns I was accustomed to for the month of July and have adjusted. So without burning this lake, because it's pretty popular up where your eyes is at, Mike, what has happened to the lake you're asking about? It got popular and it was very, very hit up by guides and musky anglers hard. All right.
Yeah, so, I'm not looking at your question, but I'm not, putting two and two together.
Down,
I know which direction. Yeah.
Down 70. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That one. Yeah. Just got the, just got the numbers are down because it got the crap kicked out of it. That's why. So it, you know,
yeah, there's a lot of factors that contribute to all these small lakes in the area where I live. I live in the counties in northern Wisconsin.
You hate to hear it.
Lakes get speared really hard. You know, sometimes they'll spear 30 or 40 mature muskies out of there in the winter. Yeah. It's like couple that with intense pressure from guides, couple that from perhaps that lake hasn't been stocked for 10 years or 20 years.
Yeah. And so it'll hit you. Anyway, Jay, here's how we're going to do this. We've prattled on forever. There are so many freaking questions. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just give Jay the prize. Here's what I'm going to do. I have my eyes closed. This is no joke. And I've you know, the little rolly thing in the middle of your mouth? Because like my inbox, I promise you there's like 200 questions we'd even answer. So it's not if we answered your question or if you made us laugh. Doesn't matter. Immaterial. Right? And we're going to do it again next week. So if you didn't win this week and you still, if you got a good question or what, just send in a freaking question. I'm having fun with this. We'll give away some more of Steve's stash. I'm literally scrolling. I have my eyes closed. I'm just spinning that little dang thing in the middle of the mouse. And Jay, count it down. And then you tell me to stop, and I will tell you whatever the cursor is on here.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, stop. What do you got?
I got it. You ready?
Okay, hit me.
Greg B. Right?
Greg B.
Crash Core. There you go, buddy. I know which. I think we've answered his question before. Didn't know that. But Greg B, shoot me an email with your address. You are the first winner of Steve's stash. So awesome. I will get that in the mail to you here. We'll box up whatever I find under my desk. I'm teasing. I'll get you some cool stuff out there. Guys, send your questions in. That is always fun to have that many. We have plenty for next week, but get them in there. Like I said, that's always fun. We'll try to hit them up. Anyway, Jay Bird, say good night. Good night, sir.
Guten Tag!
Good night!
Thanks, guys!
Thanks for the time.